from Camp Hill to Connellsville, Philadelphia to Warren, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania's complicated set of regulations governing endangered species makes it difficult for business and industry to develop land. Now, State Representative Jeff Pyle is proposing to change the process to both protect wildlife and make it easier for economic development and job creation to occur. He joins us with details. It is an antiquated state law that significantly increases the cost of public works projects from roads to schools. Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat take a look at the history and the impact of Pennsylvania's prevailing wage. And Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity takes note of the 150th anniversary of President Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and finds the nation still needs citizens willing to step forward and fight for their ideals. She has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll talk with State Representative Jeff Pyle in a few minutes, but first, this week's news headlines from PA Independent.
Hello and welcome to this week's PA Independent Capital Watch News Update. I'm Eric Boehm. Our top story is that Scranton could be headed towards another fiscal crisis like the one that resulted in city workers having their pay cut to minimum wage in 2012, according to a major credit ratings agency. In a weekly publication, Moody's warned investors that Scranton could be facing the threat of default or even bankruptcy thanks to a $20 million budget gap for the fiscal year that begins on January 1st. The city is supposed to approve a new budget by November 15th, which would have to close that deficit in order to be balanced. But without a balanced budget, the ratings agency warned that two financial institutions could withdraw from scheduled debt financing for the beleaguered northeastern Pennsylvania city. The resulting liquidity squeeze could leave the city with few options to meet its financial obligations, Moody predicted, and that raises the threat of default or bankruptcy. A similar crisis hit the city in July of 2012, which led to Mayor Chris Doherty cutting all city workers' pay to minimum wage for several weeks. That move made national headlines, but it didn't do a lot to solve the city's long-term problems.
Pennsylvania's four big taxpayer-funded universities continue to push back against letting anyone know how they spend hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer money that they get each year. The so-called state-related schools, Penn State, Pitt, Temple, and Lincoln Universities, all say to be too expensive or too tough to answer pesky questions about how they spend money. At a hearing last week, lawyers for the schools objected to the cost of answering right-to-know requests. Terry Mutchler, director of the state's Office of Open Records, says those fears are unfounded. She says the cost of not having access to right-to-know is far greater than the cost to comply with the law. Mutchler says there is a direct link between corruption and not knowing how the money is spent. There is a reform plan being considered in the state Senate, though, that focuses mainly on university police departments. The four state-related schools get a combined $517 million from Pennsylvania taxpayers in the current budget.
And finally this week, Chief Justice Ron Castile and Supreme Court Justice Max Baer shelled out an estimated $317,000 on TV advertisements to help secure more time on the bench in last week's retention elections. But lawmakers in Harrisburg say that the entire judicial selection process should be changed. Under a new plan being pitched by a bipartisan collection of lawmakers, a 15-member nominating commission of lawyers and non-lawyers selected by elected officials would review applicants' qualifications and recommend a short list to the governor for nomination. State Rep. Brian Sims of Philadelphia, who is one of the lawmakers pushing the new proposal, pointed out that last week's elections had a statewide turnout of less than 20%, with some counties reporting less than 10%. He says that the state should be looking for members of the bar with the highest qualifications to be judges, not just those with the best political skills in low turnout, low interest elections. For Benjamin Yant, this is Eric Boehm. Check out these stories and more online at paindependent.com.
Pennsylvania's current system of designating endangered species has complicated efforts by both private business interests and, in some cases, municipal governments to proceed with land development plans. In an effort to balance environmental and economic needs, State Representative Jeff Pyle of Armstrong and Indiana counties has proposed the Endangered Species Coordination Act. He joins us to discuss the bill. Jeff, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jeff, when it comes to endangered species in Pennsylvania, can you first of all tell us how those designations are currently handled?
Well, what's interesting about that, Loman, is most people are familiar with the federal endangered species list, and we've had great success on that, bringing back the bald eagle and whatnot. What a lot of folks don't know is that Pennsylvania's Game Commission and Fish and Boat Commission maintain their own proprietary Pennsylvania-only list of animals that don't show up on the federal list. Right now, the federal endangered species list is the purview of the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. And similarly, in Pennsylvania, the Game Commission and Fish and Boat do the designations on all endangered or threatened species. They can do this outside the legislature, basically on what they feel is best. And that's why I authored 1576.
The Pennsylvania version or the Pennsylvania list, is it more restrictive or less restrictive than the federal list?
I don't know that restrictive is the phrase I would use. It's more expansive, I would say that. There's 73 animals on Pennsylvania's list, and where we find these animals is mostly in the border counties where we butt up against other states. And I'll give you an example, the spotted salamander. Okay, it shows up in Greene and Fayette counties, which are right in the heart of the Appalachian Range. Yet when you look south into West Virginia, Virginia, Kentucky, the whole way down to Alabama, these spotted salamanders are in great abundance. But since they only show up sparsely, since we're the very northern end of the range, they show up on the Pennsylvania Endangered Species List. I'll give you another one, the Massasauga rattlesnake. We've got three or four counties that have these things, yet if you go to the state of Arizona, that's the state snake of Arizona. And funny story, a buddy of mine took his boys out to see the Grand Canyon, and they wanted to do the famous donkey trip down into the canyon. And the park rangers out there told them, stay on the donkeys. You step on one rock, one of those things is going to come flying out, and they are nasty. So what the bill seeks to do is a number of things. One is to truly determine, are these things endangered, or are we jumping the gun? The most important part of the bill is that whenever these rule-promulgating agencies like Game Commission or Fish and Boat pass a rule which has the force of law, that they have to send this to the Independent Regulatory Review Commission to make sure the process of law as it was written was followed. And that's kind of the spine of House Bill 1576. Nobody's interested in eliminating species or anything like that, but we've had some really, really off-the-wall bellwether-type things occur that kind of spurred this bill.
Well, as we look at these various species that are listed as endangered as a result of Pennsylvania's law, and all these designations are being arrived at essentially by unelected bureaucrats, your legislation, how would it change the process to make it perhaps more accountable, more fair, whatever word you want to use?
Loman, and I'm one of those guys that was elected before the pay raise, and for the listeners, no, I did not vote for it. I've learned that there's no level or no action of government that is exempt from scrutiny. And right now, I feel Game Commission and Fish and Boat are acting that way. They're acting without scrutiny, and what the bill does is if they are going to list any more animals on this list, and right now we're in grave danger of having all of our bats listed as endangered because of the white nose syndrome that's just killing them all. What this bill would do is if Game Commission should choose to list, for example, the common house bat, the little brown bat, which has been mentioned, they would have to do their scientific findings, make the determination that this thing is supposed to be on the list. But what changes is now they submit it to ARC, the Independent Regulatory Review Commission, to make sure all the tenets of the law have been followed. Right now, that doesn't exist. Right now, Fish and Boat and Game Commissioner, the only two of Pennsylvania's rulemaking agencies that are not subject to review by the IRC. And kind of ironically, what a lot of folks don't know is Pennsylvania has a list of endangered plants as well. Those are overseen by Department of Conservation and Natural Resource, who, ironically, has to submit their rules to the IRC. I mean, by bringing Game Commission and Fish and Boat under the purview of IRC, I feel is lending to a greater consistency and a greater predictability and a greater transparency. And it does, as one of my friends on the committee said, it lends a second set of eyes. And when you're dealing with government, it's never bad to have a second set of eyes.
It's actually quite preferable. We are talking with State Representative Jeff Pyle, who represents Armstrong in parts of Indiana County, the 60th State Legislative District. And Jeff, why should we be concerned about this? What impact do these designations have, particularly on state development, on land development, on development of natural resources?
That's a very good one to bring up. We've had dozens of letters come in from housing builders and municipal sewage authorities. The one that really jumps off the page at me was up in Carbon County. State Rep Doyle Heffley doing a great job for those guys up there. They were mandated to build a sewage plant. Okay, the feds came in and told them they had to do it. So the municipality got the money out and paid the engineers to design it, and they started building. And close to culminating the project, I believe it was Fish and Boat showed up and told them that their entire engineering design was flawed and that they were going right through the midst of a bog turtle refuge. So these guys went out and they put more money out for a new plan. And meanwhile, this is tens of thousands of dollars racking up. And I believe Doyle told me they ended up going with the third or fourth engineering design plan that would finally meet Fish and Boat approval. But by that time, they'd escalated the cost on that sewage plant by hundreds of thousands of dollars. All these designations have driven up costs for taxpayers. They've thwarted housing starts, cul-de-sacs in York County and in other places. I just feel there it needs to be reined in. At some point, Homo sapien has to matter as an animal in this whole discussion, and I feel the bill does that.
So you also feel that while making the process more fair and more equitable, giving it another set of eyes, it also still provides the type of protections that are needed for species that are legitimately endangered?
Yes, it does. And we were very careful to address that. Nobody in the legislature is better prepared to deal with endangered species than somebody contracted by Fish and Boat or Game Commission. That whole part of it stays with them. The part, really the only change they got to look at after Chairman Causer's amendment went in, is did they follow the letter of the law? Because that's all IRC is really going to speak to.
And finally, let's touch briefly on the Small Games of Chance bill. It did move out of the House this past week. What impact, Jeff, do you see that having on fraternal organizations, you know, fire departments, VFWs, social halls, groups such as that?
I tell you what, that's another bill that's got a lot of moving parts. When we ran the last Small Games of Chance bill 2-3 years ago, we churned up some unintended consequence that impacted negatively on our fraternals, our fire halls, our VFWs and American Legions, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things the bill did is it lessened the paperwork required on some of our American Legions and fire halls. It changed the ratio of how fire halls who really do yeoman's work out there, raising money to keep themselves afloat. Now, when they do a small game of chance, like a punch-out ticket or a gun raffle or whatever, they get to keep a greater percentage of what they're raising. It remains to be seen what the end result's going to be, but I think it's an improvement over what we had. I know back in the 60th, I've got my staff, as we speak, calling all the fire halls and the fraternals and municipalities and whatnot, and we're going to try to have a big sit-down and explain this thing, because there's some new relationships created within the bill between fraternal organizations like the Eagles and the Elks and the Lions and the Falcons and the municipalities that host them. So it's brave new territory. We're still learning all the nuances.
So a lot is happening in Harrisburg. We have been talking with State Representative Jeff Pyle. He represents Armstrong and part of Indiana County, the 60th state legislative district. And Jeff, if we have listeners who might want to learn more about your endangered species bill or some of the other issues we've discussed, where can they go to get that information?
Sure, you can pick that up on my website, which is, and I'll spell it for you, it's www.jeffpyle.net.
State Representative Jeff Pyle. Jeff, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Hey, Loman, much appreciated. You have a great day.
Everyone agrees Pennsylvania's roads and bridges are in bad shape, but there is considerable disagreement over what steps must be taken to fix the problem. Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat examine one way to make tax dollars go further on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi, and with me today is my colleague at the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, how are you?
Good, Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. It's good to see you again. Frank, we've been talking off and on and writing off and on at the Allegheny Institute over this year about the transportation bill that the state has debated. And we're now into November. The Senate passed its version of the bill back in June before the legislative recess for the summer. The House has the bill. And one of the things that they're debating is ending the requirement for prevailing wage. Frank, tell our listeners, what is prevailing wage, and why do some of the members of the House want to get rid of it or change it?
Oh, absolutely. In 1961, Pennsylvania came up with their own version of the federal Davis-Bacon Law, which provides that any project receiving federal funding costing more than $25,000, or actually any public funding costing more than $25,000, is subject to prevailing wages for that county. And, of course, the Pennsylvania Department of Labor keeps tabs on what the wage should be given certain occupations for the various counties. But mostly they are the union wages. They go to the union halls and ask them, hey, what does an electrician make? What does a road miller make? That kind of thing. So for all intents and purposes, it is the union wage that prevails in the area. Now, again, it is subject to all projects costing more than $25,000. Now, for a lot of contractors, private sector contractors, it tends to shut them out of the bidding process, not so much because of the wages, but because of the benefits that have to be paid. Because the prevailing wage law also recommends a set level of benefits that needs to be compensated, whereas most unions have trust funds to which they pay for health care, retirement benefits, etc. Private contractors don't, so they're required to pay a cash compensation for the benefits, and then, of course, that opens them up to higher payroll taxes, etc. So that's really the end of the stick that most private contractors don't like. They're usually okay with the wages. But, you know, Pennsylvania is one of 32 states that has a prevailing wage law, just about all here in the Northeast, with the exception of New Hampshire. And so it's one of those things that's been a bit of a relic, hasn't really done much, hasn't been changed much since 1961, and the House Republicans are holding fast to the possibility of changing it in return for their support on the transportation bill.
I was say, there's probably a lot of things, obviously, that have changed since 1961. So what exactly would the proposal do? Would it eliminate prevailing wage on road projects, or is it just changing the threshold, like you had mentioned, it was $25,000 to be expended in a public project. So what exactly would the proposal do?
Right. The proposal is, in fact, just changing the threshold. You know, obviously, we would like to see it eliminate the prevailing wage altogether, but the threshold would raise itself from $25,000 to $100,000, again, on all publicly funded projects, not just road work. Interestingly enough, everyone on the revenue side complains when something hasn't been increased due to inflation. But on the cost side, you know, you mentioned raising it, they raise, holy heck. If you were to inflation rate this, adjusted for inflation, the prevailing wage law should be about $197,000. That would be the equivalent of $25,000 in 1961. A couple of states have made changes. our immediate neighbor to the west, Ohio, pegs their prevailing wage law for inflation. Every couple of years, they adjust it to represent changes to inflation. Indiana, state seat Indianapolis, raised their wage from $150,000 to $300,000. Maryland has it at $500,000, which I thought was fairly interesting. They set it relatively high. It is not inflation adjusted. So the notion of adjusting this for inflation is certainly not without merit.
So as you pointed out, it's any public expenditure. Mm-hmm. That if there was something that was funded with public money and something has to be built or improved, mm-hmm. The prevailing wage would have to be paid on it. But it is coming through this debate on the transportation bill that there's a contingent in the mm-hmm. House that says this is kind of the legislative horse trading that we're going to engage in, that this is the bill for raising revenue for the highways, bridges, public transit, all throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which a lot of people said they need to have this done. It's gone back to Governor Rendell, if not earlier, that there's at least been two panels that have been put together to say this is the condition of our infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But basically, so what you're telling our listeners today is that the prevailing wage probably came about as a trade-off as well, to say, well, somebody back in the 60s or even earlier in another state at some point said, wow, if the public treasury is going to be opened up and we're going to use it to build some things, we want to see something in return that's just taxpayer money, right? It just costs probably a couple dollars per household. So why shouldn't we be able to get the public, the unions, their quote fair share of the treasury mm-hmm. through a prevailing wage? So now we're coming to the point again where the taxpayers are saying, okay, we might be paying more to fix the roads mm-hmm. at the gas pump. We're going to be paying more through other sources of taxes, possibly to pay for mass transit and in operations and capital improvements. So this group in the House is saying, okay, well, let's have this trade-off. If we're going to go forward with the expenditure here of making public infrastructure, the expense of public infrastructure, that there needs to be this trade-off to say we're going to get rid of this threshold at the artificially low rate of $25,000 mm-hmm. and bring it up to what would be somewhat current. It's not getting rid of it, but it's basically saying we're going to update it with the times. I'm not asking you to prognosticate mm-hmm. here, but I will. What are the chances of this happening?
Well, it all depends on how steadfast the House members who are supporting this hold to their guns. Obviously, the Senate has asked, and I believe the governor has asked, for an increase to the wholesale gasoline cap, which would mean an increase at the pump. And the Republicans in the House are saying, look, we want something in return. Let's raise this threshold. And, of course, predictably, some Democrats in the House are having a heart failure over this because, they're going to use all the emotional tricks of, hurting the poor, da-da-da. But where this really comes into play is at the municipal level. Most of PennDOT's projects are going to cost more than $100,000. So they're not going to be affected too much. This is going to be at the municipal level where road milling, which may cost them $30,000, would now be exempted. Road milling, which was maintenance, and maintenance was outside the purview of the law up until the Supreme Court changed it a handful of years ago to make it in the purview of the law. This is going to help them out a little bit. And the municipal budgets are the ones that are strained the most. And, of course, that gets back to your property taxes and your earned income taxes. So this has a little more far-reaching effects at the local level than it does at the state level. I'm not sure there's a whole lot of state projects, construction projects under $100,000. But, boy, it'll be a big burden off the minds of municipal and school officials.
Wow, that's really interesting stuff, Frank. Thanks for sharing it with our listeners today. And I'm sure if they want to read your work that you've done on prevailing wage over the years, which has been plenty, they can go to our website at www.AlleghenyInstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
The nation was saved at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, site of the pivotal battle of the Civil War. As we commemorate the 150th anniversary of President Abraham Lincoln's historic address dedicating the National Cemetery at Gettysburg, Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity says the country still needs patriots willing to sacrifice for their nation. She has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Pennsylvania is for patriots. Our Commonwealth has been home to and played host to numerous significant events in the history of our nation. With Veterans Day, November 11th, and the 150th commemoration of the Gettysburg Address on November 19th, it seems like an appropriate time to contemplate commitment in the Commonwealth and what lies behind us and before us. 70 years ago, on November 19th, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln stood on the hallowed battleground of Gettysburg during the dedication of the Gettysburg National Cemetery. Lincoln was not the main speaker and only spoke for a mere 2 minutes about sacrifice and the future of this great nation. Lincoln's final paragraph reads, "It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people, shall not perish from the earth." There is still a great task that lies before us. There is much work to be done in our Commonwealth and in our nation. Legislators in Harrisburg are considering a $2.5 billion tax increase to fund transportation projects, including bridge replacement and mass transit. Pension systems are nearly $50 billion in debt due to mismanagement and unwarranted retroactive increases in benefits, and neither of these issues are close to being resolved. Nationally, Obamacare has been proven to be a disastrous string of broken promises at best, and the national debt is steadily rising close to $17.2 trillion. Our liberties and this very nation are threatened nearly every day. Will you highly resolve that the veterans that have spent part of their life in service and those that have died shall not have served or died in vain? What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. We owe it to the ones who came before us to engage in the process and honor their commitment and sacrifice. As Thomas Jefferson said, "Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty." Will you be vigilant? America needs you. I'm Anna McCausland, Director of Policy for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find more about us at americansforprosperity.org or afp-pa.org. And follow us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and PATownHall.com. You can also hear us on VoiceOfPA.net. For 18 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WEXC-FM and WGRP-AM in Greenville, WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, and WHHS-FM in Havertown, Pennsylvania. If you would like to comment on any of the interviews you've heard on Lincoln Radio Journal, please email us at lincolnradiojournal@gmail.com or visit our page on Facebook. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Wayne, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.